We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Talking Buffalo, featuring conversations with guests from around the world of sports, media, pop culture, and all things Buffalo, with your host, Patrick Moran.
All right, what is going on, everybody? How you doing? Welcome to another episode of Talking Buffalo, your weekday daily driver for Buffalo Sports Talk and more. My name is Patrick Moran. Thank you very, very much, as always, for locking in, whether you're watching, listening, following, subscribing. I appreciate y'all very much. There has been, over the past even just couple weeks or so, a substantial growth in subscribers, listeners on the audio side, especially viewers on the video side. And I simply cannot thank you enough. It means literally the world to me. Today's show is sponsored by Imperial Pizza. Two great locations, including the brand new one on Main Street in Buffalo. And of course, their staple location, 1035 Abbott Road in South Buffalo. Speaking of which, I will be at that location, Imperial Pizza, live to do an episode of Talking Buffalo Thursday night. I am going to be joined by good friend, longtime Buffalo News, Buffalo Bills beat reporter, Jay Skirsky. He's going to join me live. He's been at Imperial with me before. Always have a good time with him. We're going to talk Bills. We'll talk NFL draft, all kinds of stuff with Jay. So that's going to be Thursday night live at Imperial for our Friday podcast. Tomorrow's show, I'll be here in studio with my guy, Tone Pucks. Plenty of Buffalo Sabres talk. I really want to get into some Don Granato talk tomorrow. Now, I know there's primarily Bills fans, and we're always going to have to cater primarily to the Buffalo Bills and our Bills audience, which I very much enjoy doing. But from time to time, I kind of like to break it off a little bit. And this is a great time to have a conversation about Don Granato, man. I've been putting together some numbers, looking at some stats that other people put out there. And it just feels to me right now like this is a hockey team that just doesn't seem like it's ever going to get over the hump as long as Don Granato's coach. He just doesn't seem like that guy. So anyway, I'm going to have an extensive conversation with Tone Pucks about that tomorrow. We'll take some questions as well for Bills, Sabres, all kinds of stuff from the audience. Always a good time here in studio with Tone Pucks. So that'll be on tomorrow's show. All right, as for today, I'm flying solo. Hopefully this won't be a very long episode. I kind of want to take this podcast today and divide it into four segments. I got a few thoughts on Stephon Diggs personally that I want to share. You know, for the last week or so since his trade went down, I've had multiple guests on the show, and I've gotten their thoughts, their views, their takes on what they think about the trade, what they think about Stephon Diggs. Now that I'm finally doing a solo show here, I got some of my own that I want to share with you. Speaking of sharing with you, I got an issue with some folks out there that continue to call Ed Oliver and his contract a bargain. Like every time a defensive tackle around the NFL signs a big money deal, a monster deal, instantly fans, media, content creators just rush to social media and let you know that the contract that Ed Oliver has with the Buffalo Bills is a bargain. I disagree. I'm going to tell you why on this show. The primary focus of today's episode, the Bills Super Bowl window is still absolutely open, maybe even wide open, despite what you hear from a lot of the national media, maybe some locally as well. But I think the easiest path to getting to the Super Bowl has passed the Buffalo Bills by. Not close, but that window, getting out of it, is never going to be harder than it is right now. So I'll elaborate plenty more on that coming up. Then at the very end of the show, I'm going to spend just a few minutes, a little bit of self-indulgent time here. WrestleMania weekend, WrestleMania 40, great show. Well, for the most part, a great show. Talk about a couple of the highs, a couple of the lows, a few personal fun thoughts on that to share with you. I know there's not a lot of you out there that are wrestling, or more specifically, WWE fans, but I know there's enough of you. I hear from you quite often, so we'll hit on that too, but I'll save that to the very end of the show because, like I said, I know that's much more of a niche audience. Not going to waste any time here. I want to get going right away. I want to talk about Stephon Diggs right off the top here. I don't need to tell you about the trade. You already know about the trade. You already know about the compensation. We've talked about on the show. You've had your own thoughts, your own opinions. You know, how are the Bills on the field going to replace what they lose for Stephon Diggs? Plenty of stuff to talk about, and a lot of it already has been talked about. But like I said, I just want to take a couple minutes here and kind of share my own thoughts on this whole development, which was, without question, a bombshell. I mean, I think that's worth noting. Like, if we would have talked, we would have talked about 10 days ago and said, this is going to be Stephon Diggs' last year in Buffalo, and after the season, the Bills will get out of that contract. I feel like that was the path that most of us saw this road headed towards, seeing what happens this year. And, you know, if things ain't great, you move on. It seems a lot easier. But we spent a lot of time, you know, first couple mock drafts that we did on this show, lots of other mocks around social media, Bills content creators, NFL content creators. The general theme seemed to be, well, you got Stephon Diggs and you got Shakir, you signed Curtis Samuel, you got Kincaid. What are the Bills going to do with the draft when it comes to wide receiver? Do they really need to get a wide receiver in the first round? And if they do take one in the first round, that's the guy that you're going to be grooming to eventually, hopefully, become that number one receiver for when Stephon Diggs is ultimately gone. Of course. Well, things got accelerated in a big way last week when Stephon Diggs got traded to the Houston Texans. And again, we all have varying opinions on the trade. We all have varying opinions on Stephon Diggs as a Buffalo Bill, as a teammate, as a person, as to what his legacy ultimately is going to be with the Buffalo Bills. And like I said, I just kind of want to share a few thoughts of my own here. And I keep going back to the same thing. And I've asked guests on over the past week. You know, I've talked about this with Anthony Marino on the show. I talked about it with Marlon Kerner when I had him live from Imperial, former Buffalo Bills corner. We talked about this. I kept asking them the same question over and over. I think the thing that I struggle with the most, that I have the hardest time figuring out, of course, you know, being an outsider, not being in the locker room, not being a part of the team, we're all left wondering the same thing. And that's just, why wasn't Stephon Diggs happier in Buffalo? Because it certainly did not seem like he was happy to be here. And all the tweets, the cryptic tweets over the past And that's primarily over the, for, I'd say, the last year or so. I'm not going to say that Stephon Diggs came to Buffalo in 2020, immediately was unhappy. Not the case at all. But I feel like it was pretty apparent. I don't feel like I'm, you know, uncovering any rocks here when we say that he was not happy, at least over the last year, maybe even the last 2 years. Those cryptic tweets, those tweets that we kept calling cryptic, turns out I don't really don't think they were that cryptic after all. Lots of reports about Stephon being unhappy. Lots of reports, or at least rumors out there, we'll leave it at that, that Stephon Diggs actually asked for a trade. I'll never understand why he wasn't happier in Buffalo, because when you look at it on the surface, it seemed like every single thing that a guy who wants to be the man, who wants to be the guy in the office, that wants to be that number one wide receiver, it seems on the surface anyway, everything was right there for him. I mean, you're talking about a guy who was, without question, the number one receiver on this football team. Like, he wasn't 1A, there was no 1B. It was Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs was the number one receiver on this football team. Stephon Diggs put up ridiculous stats, even with the struggles over the back half of 2023. Stephon Diggs still put up ridiculous numbers. I've said it on this show a handful of times now. He is just one of four players in the history of the NFL. History, not recent times, history, to have four consecutive seasons of at least 100 receptions or more. Antonio Brown did it 6 straight years. Marvin Harrison did it 4 straight years. Davante Adams has done it 4 straight years and counting. And then Stephon Diggs, 4 straight years, 100 receptions or more and counting. So one of just four ever. So he's your undisputed number one. The stats have been great. The contract was huge. Signed a monster extension just 2 years ago. In fact, quite literally, just past that 2-year mark. So your boy got paid. He's your number one. He's putting up crazy numbers. He played with one of the very best quarterbacks in the NFL. You know, a lot of great receivers who come into this league, they spend a good chunk, maybe even most of their career, playing for shit quarterbacks. And you're left wondering, well, you know, what if they play with a better quarterback? Andre Johnson from the Houston Texans, ironically, the team Stephon just went to. Perfect example. Hall of Fame caliber career, complete shit quarterbacks for most of it. So he didn't have that problem. He played with one of the best. A guy who was clearly, you know, a quarterback who was targeting him first. So he had the quarterback. He's got the money. He's got the clout. He's got the stats. And he had the support of the fans. That's not even a question, too. Now, I know there's some people on, especially social media, that maybe over the past year or so, and in fairness to the fans, understandably so, that grew tired of what seemed to be a lot of Stephon Diggs cryptic bullshit. I know there's a lot of people out there who took issue with the fact that when Stephon's brother was just taking shots at the Bills and Josh Allen, talking about getting them all on up out of here, that Stephon didn't really come to, at least the way it's perceived, that he did not come to Buffalo's defense. I know that rubbed some people the wrong way. Again, the tweets, maybe just the way he put some things, or maybe that he didn't say enough to their liking. It rubbed some fans the wrong way. But make no mistake about it, man. By and large, Stephon Diggs was one of the most popular Buffalo Bills players that I've seen here in quite a long time. You know, I made a point last summer while going to Bills training camp, and I probably went to a good, I don't know, at least 7-8 practices. One of the things that I looked for was what's the body language of Stephon Diggs, and also what was going to be the fan reaction to Stephon Diggs, because we went through a lot of the bullshit last offseason with him not showing up to OTAs, which, by the way, I never thought that was a big deal. Missing day one of mandatory minicamp, which I thought was a pretty big deal. Just a lot of uncertainty. But anyway, I remember locking into the fans what the reaction was going to be with Stephon Diggs. And I'm telling you, I mean, obviously Josh Allen would get the biggest pops. No question about that. But after that, it was Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs would get a huge pop every time he came, you know, from the dorm area onto the practice field. Fans would lose their shit. Every time he made a big play, you can hear it just a little bit extra from the crowd. I'd say maybe Trey White would have been the only other player on the team after Josh that I would even compare, you know, in terms of fan response to with Stephon Diggs. So again, he had it all. He seemingly had it all anyway. And when it comes to Buffalo, and he's in a small market, which I don't know, maybe that was a detriment to him. I don't know. But he was in a market where it just seems a little more player friendly than, say, other markets like Boston or LA, you know, New York City, DC, stuff like that. So, man, you just wrap that all up. It all seems like he had every reason in the world to be happy, but he wasn't. And that's obvious that he wasn't. He had rifts. He had rifts with the head coach. He had rifts with the quarterback, which, by the way, that was real too. You know, the Josh Stephon Diggs relationship, rocky. It was rocky. And we've heard lots of reports. I hate sounding like some kind of insider because I'm not, you know, but I know some people who know some people, and I can tell you, man, the rift between Josh and Steph at times was certainly real. Now, they didn't hate each other. I wouldn't even say they disliked each other too, but they had that kind of friendship that was rocky, man, really up and down. I'm not going to say that, you know, a lot of the nice stuff, especially that Josh would say about Stephon, I'm not going to say that was being disingenuous by Josh. But again, they had their moments where things sucked. You know, Tim Graham on his podcast recently talked about a specific incident where, dating back to the Bills season opener last year, when they lost in primetime against the New York Jets and Josh Allen played like absolute dog shit. He was the worst player on the field. The biggest reason why the Bills lost that specific game. And which, by the way, that's my opinion. Tim didn't say that. I'm telling you that. Anyway, what Tim did talk about was in the locker room after the game. Lots of players were going up to a very despondent, dejected, quiet Josh Allen, just kind of, you know, putting their hands on his shoulder pad, saying, "We got you, we got you. It'll be all right." I know he quoted Deion Dawkins, who said something along, you know, "That's our guy." I can't remember what he said, or "Josh for life. That's my guy for life." Something like that. But anyway, my point was, everyone was giving him encouragement. And then, according to Tim, Stephon came up to him, said something, which Tim doesn't know, didn't try to guess what he was saying. But whatever was said, it was enough to get Josh to pop up angrily and say, "It's one fucking game," and pretty much get away from me. Which is just an example that, you know, this rift at times was real. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here, by the way, and I'm not going to put that rift saying it's all on Stephon and, you know, none of it's on Josh. Now, Stephon is a, you know, there's a lot of things, including almost an unrivaled worker. Like, this dude's body is his temple, man. He works out. He is always in shape. He's always working out, and he puts himself at a standard. And maybe, you know, on some levels, he holds his teammates to those same standards. And maybe on some levels, it's not there. And I can tell you, I know that one of the, if not the start of the Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, not going to say rivalry, don't even want to really necessarily say rift, but the start of their rocky relationship, the premise of it, the origin of it, I should say, probably the 2022 AFC divisional round playoff loss to Cincinnati. And Cover One has talked about it on their show. I don't want to rehash all the details, but long story short, there was a specific play or plays that Josh Allen at practice during the week just didn't seem to get down. Plays designed for Stephon Diggs, and Josh Allen said he's got it. He'll get it figured out, yada, yada, yada. Fast forward to the game. They run the play. Stephon's there. Could have been a big play or a touchdown. Josh doesn't see him. Stephon comes to the sidelines. He's furious. You know, the now infamous photograph where you never heard the audio, where Stephon's got his arms up, waving at Josh and yelling something. Apparently, he was yelling, "What's your excuse now?" So anyway, this is not brand new. This wasn't even just this past season. There's been some moments between them. There's obviously been a rift for some time about, or I should say about, but with Stephon and head coach Sean McDermott, which I don't think you need to be an insider to figure that shit out. Stephon just flat out did not like Sean McDermott. Let's just put that out there, man. I don't know. I can't say the feeling was mutual, but Stephon, and to be fair to him, rightfully so, blamed Sean McDermott for 13 seconds, as he should. That probably cost the Bills their best chance to go to a Super Bowl. So I get it, man, especially when a player gets traded and he has got a rift with the quarterback that you love, and it seems like he's turned his back on the fan base. He wanted out. He very, 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 very likely asked for a trade. You know what? I'm just going to say he did. He asked for a trade. All right, so, man, it's easy to kick Stephon Diggs on the way out the door. But, again, a lot of the stuff that he's mad about, if you really think about it, honestly, it's justified. Again, Sean McDermott blew the golden path to a Super Bowl. Josh shit the bed in that Bengals game. He wasn't ready. That was a home playoff game. They should have won. He wasn't the only one. It wasn't just Josh Allen. Let's be clear about that. The defense sucked. Lots of guys sucked. What's your quarterback? There was a lot of shit going on. We all know about it, or at least most of us know a little something about something, and it just was not a good week for Josh. We're not ready to play that game. Was nowhere near his best. Again, maybe some of the guys, the way they prepare in the offseason, the way they prepare during the week, the summer, whatever, it's not on his level. I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to pull up a clip, if you haven't heard this, before we take a break, and then we'll move on to other stuff here, too. Anthony Brohaska from Cover One was on the show earlier this week. We did a Buffalo Bills mock draft, which, by the way, if you missed that, go back, listen, watch. That was a phenomenal show, not just for the mock draft portion, but man, oh man, Anthony dropped some knowledge on a ton of prospects. We talked about a ton of potential trade up, trade down scenarios. It was just really good shit. But anyway, he had a really, really, really interesting take that I hadn't thought much about, kind of a... got me thinking about, you know, like I said, with Stephon Diggs and just his work ethic and stuff. Anyway, I'm not going to sit here and talk anymore. I'm going to play this clip for you. It's about maybe a little 2 minutes or so. Come back, get a couple quick thoughts, and then a break.
I mean, now I know I'm probably in the minority. I've never really had a problem with Stephon Diggs and like what he does. I think dude works extremely hard. He grinds. Yeah. And I know a lot of people coming into my comments now being like, all he cares about is fashion and trying to do this for image and this and that. Dude works so hard, like, to perfect his craft. You don't get to be that good of a route runner without dedicating yourself to the craft of football. He grinds. He works extremely hard. And when you operate in that way, similar to, I don't want to make this exact comparison, but kind of similar like how Kobe Bryant was. Like, if you're not performing up the snuff, he's not going to be like, hey, man, pick it up. He's like, yo, dude, you suck. Like, get better. We have to do this. I'm not saying Diggs necessarily did that type of stuff, but Diggs is, sure, he treats himself with that level of competitiveness and expecting 10 out of 10 every time. And I think he does that with other people as well. And also mixed within that, there are the times of, we used to see so many shots of it and people would praise him for it and juxtapose it with his fiery nature when things were going sideways in game. And he's dapping up linemen being like, come on, guys, we'll be fine. Let's get it together. Or him telling Josh, hey, it'll be fine. We'll get it together. And but then the times when he's trying to hold people accountable to a similar manner that he holds himself accountable, I think because of his previous stops and his track record, it gets painted in that negative light. And then when things don't ultimately work out in totality, it's like, nope, everything was always a negative. He was always a problem. And I'm not saying he wasn't a problem in some ways, but overall, like to kind of answer your question fully, like, no, I'm not surprised. Like, I think when you have that type of track record and you're kind of that wear out your welcome guy, once you leave, things come to light or things get painted in a different light or different picture. And everybody just kind of pieces it together to be like, nope, he is who we thought he was.
All right, some good stuff there from Anthony Brohaska over at Cover One. Look, I think ultimately the question for me that I wonder about, besides, like I said, we talked about at length there, why he just didn't seem happier, is ultimately how does Stephon Diggs get remembered? Is he going to be the guy that, you know, down the road, and I'm not talking about now because ain't nobody going to look at Stephon Diggs favorably now in his career with the Bills. A lot of hurt fans, a lot of mad people. And I understand all that, but I'm talking about ultimately down the road, you know, 5, 10, 15 years from now. How does Stephon Diggs ultimately get remembered? Is he going to be that dude that had 445 receptions, 5,372 yards, 37 touchdowns in 4 years? A guy who rewrote the Bills' single season receiving record book? A guy who in just 4 years ranks fourth all-time in receptions, who ranks fourth all-time in yards, fourth all-time in touchdown receptions, again, over 4 years. Is that going to be the way that we look back, you know, a handful of years from now and we remember Stephon Diggs? Or is he going to be, you know, the distraction who forced his way out of Buffalo while this team was, you know, had a quarterback in his prime and greatest, maybe the greatest opportunities to win a Super Bowl? I don't know, man. It's just, it's really fascinating to me when it comes to Stephon Diggs. And I'll take a quick break after that. I got a couple real quick thoughts on Ed Oliver. Actually, just want to point out one thing. And then I want to spend a couple of minutes talking about this Bills Super Bowl window that a lot of people, especially nationalists, anyway, they think is closed. I disagree, but there's some concerns. Be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, I am back here, and again, we've talked about Stephon Diggs first half of the show. I want to point out something real quick about Ed Oliver, and then I kind of want to get into this Bills perceived Super Bowl window closing. I don't agree, but there's some causes for concern. I mean, let's be real about it. Ed Oliver. All right, real quick, I just want to say this. So Derrick Brown of the Carolina Panthers last week signed a monster contract extension. He got like 4 years, $96 million, like $63 million guaranteed. That was a crazy-ass contract. But instantly, and I guess to a point I can understand it, but a couple of our Buffalo sports media friends, guys who I love, man, I respect the hell out of. I knew this shit was coming to fans, media, instantly. They're talking about it being, you know, Ed Oliver being a bargain all of a sudden because his contract's for 4 years and only $68 million. My guy, Matt Perino from NewYorkUp.com, he tweeted about it. My man, Nate Gary from WGR, tweeted along the same lines. Again, same deal that, you know, Ed Oliver's contract is like this big old bargain. I'm here to tell you, man, it's not. And I'm tired of hearing that shit. I really am when it comes to Ed Oliver. And I'm not, listen, I know it comes across that way sometimes. I'm not an Ed Oliver hater. He's a good football player. But I just simply cannot bring myself to call a player who has, I mean, let's just be real here. He has face planted in the playoffs the last two times the Bills have been eliminated, completely face planted. And I mean, done nothing. How can you call a guy that's had in the last two years when the Bills have lost in the playoffs, this past year to Kansas City, the year before to Cincinnati, both at home, both in your own stadium in front of 70,000 fans or whatever the hell it is, 2 years combined, zero sacks, zero quarterback hits, zero solo tackles in his last two playoff losses. I am not going to call that dude a bargain. I'm just not going to do it. And this kind of goes back to a point I've tried to make on the show a handful of times. Something that really resonated with me well over a year ago when Tyler Dunn was with me for a show that we did at Imperial Pizza. And I'm not talking about the Sean McDermott articles and all the feedback from that. I'm talking about even before that. When the Bills lost to the Bengals in the playoffs, I remember talking to Tyler and he was talking about his issue with the Bills seems to be and how they're perceived. The goalposts should be moved. Players, the team, whether it's a successful season or not, should be graded on a curve with the playoffs. And it just doesn't feel like it is. Ed Oliver could be as good as he wants to be in the regular season. And I'm not saying his contract sucks. So I'm going to be clear about that too. I'm not saying he's overpaid. What I'm telling you is don't call a contract, don't call a player making $68 million over 4 years who's done zilch, nada, zero in the playoffs. Don't call him a bargain because he's not. He's not. This goes back to, you know, something maybe I could have hit on with Stefon Diggs earlier. In fact, I'm pretty sure I dedicated an entire episode not long after the Bills lost to the Chiefs this year, the differences in that game and those teams. It ain't Pat Mahomes and Josh Allen. And I know everybody around the league, fans around the league, except for Buffalo fans, are going to say Pat Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league and maybe the greatest of all time already. Certainly headed that way. And it's not even that I disagree with that. But what I'm telling you is, and what I said on the show was, the Chiefs didn't beat the Bills the last couple of years in the playoffs because Pat Mahomes was considerably better than Josh Allen. Not even close. The Chiefs beat the Bills the last 2 years, and especially this past year, because their other star players were better than the Bills' star players. Travis Kelce didn't do shit over the last 5-6 weeks of the season. Shows out in the playoffs like he always does. Chris Jones makes the biggest plays of the game in the biggest moments of the game. Meanwhile, Stefon Diggs, nothing. Stefon Diggs, 63 yards total receiving in the Bills' last three elimination losses. So, by the way, it makes his departure a little bit easier to stomach. Ed Oliver, you know, he had a decent game 3 years ago when they lost to the Chiefs, 42-36. I can't say he was no factor. He had a sack, a couple quarterback hits, but these last two playoff losses against the Bengals, against the Chiefs, nothing. Chiefs star players, play like star players in the big moments. Bills star players did not. So I refuse to call Ed Oliver and his contract any kind of bargain until I see him play better in the playoffs. All right, now as far as this Bills Super Bowl window, I've been waiting the whole show to get to this point. Is it closed? Is it not closed? It's not closed, right? It's not closed, but you know, let's start with the positives. It's foolish to write the Buffalo Bills off right now that they've, you know, they've had their run and they're done for a couple reasons. The obvious one is the quarterback. I truly feel this in my heart. Not a homer take, man. I promise you. Not a homer take. I legitimately feel this. Josh Allen, I'm not going to say he's the best quarterback in the league, but what I will say is I feel like Josh Allen is as capable as any player in this entire league to carry a team. I truly feel that. He's that good. He can carry a team to a win on any given Sunday. He can carry a team to a win in the playoffs. I feel like he's played good enough to do that in the past. So he's not old. He ain't washed up. He's been relatively healthy. He's not hobbled. Still has weapons in his prime. How far into his prime? I don't know, but he's in his prime. And I just feel he's as capable of leading a team to a championship as any quarterback in the NFL. That alone is enough reason to say it is idiotic and fucking stupid to say the Bills Super Bowl window was close. But even beyond Josh, there's a core right now with the Buffalo Bills that includes plenty of young players that are not even at their peak yet. Like young players that I think are still ascending. They haven't hit their ceiling. They got room to grow. So that means players that are already pretty good football players that I think are going to be even better. Because you know what? Ultimately, on football teams, championship teams, it's not necessarily about the players that you add, especially in free agency. Oftentimes, it's those guys that you draft and develop, them hitting their potential. And I think the Bills got plenty of those guys. Again, guys who are already good players, and I think they're still ascending. Like, they're not as good as they're even going to be yet. Jarrell Bernard, definitely one of them. A huge surprise from last year. And shit, man, I'm excited for him to be healthy and playing next to one of the best linebackers in the NFL. A really good one-tech defensive tackle in front of him if he can stay healthy. I love what Jarrell Bernard, what I expect him to bring to this team going forward. Christian Benford, another guy, a really good young corner who I think still got plenty of room to grow. Greg Rizzo might be going into his fourth year now. But again, I still look at him and I think he's a player that could do even better. I mean, he's been good. He's actually been more than just good. He's been really good, but he hasn't been great yet. Like, I feel like that could be coming this year from him. He feels like a legit breakout candidate this year. We saw what Dalton Kincaid did last year as a rookie. He's got a year of experience in his league now. He's seen some things. He knows some things that he didn't know a year ago. I expect him to be better. James Cook, fourth in the NFL last year in rushing. By the way, it might not have seemed like that. Oh, maybe that's me. But anyway, my point is, Duke can run the ball. Duke catches the ball. He's inconsistent. He had a couple bad drops last year. Again, another year of experience, growth. I would anticipate that next time he makes those plays. Khalil Shakir looked really good at the end of the year when he finally got a extended opportunity to do something in this offense. A pair of young offensive linemen. Cyrus Torrence, just a rookie last year. I expect him to be significantly better in 2024. Even Spencer Brown. I mean, he might be going into his fourth year, but a very up and down first couple years. Back injury, a lot of question marks going into last year. I thought Spencer Brown was solid as shit last year. So these are like guys that I don't even think they've hit their peak yet. Like, they're good players that I expect to get better. And even with what they lost, I mean, there's still leaders on this team. There's plenty of established, really, really good players that I think are leadership material. I know it might sound stupid to say Von Miller, 35 years old, best days clearly behind him, but he's a good leader. He really is. I think Von Miller's a great leader. I'm not even counting Josh Allen, of course. Matt Milano. You know, he might not be that outspoken, but his play does his talking. I love Matt Milano. I know you love Matt Milano as well. So, yeah, Milano. Teron Johnson, you lose some DBs. I think it's time for him to step up. He's already one of the best DBs, maybe the best nickel in the NFL. Certainly one of the top three. You know, he could take on more of a leadership role. I think it's always been there for Deion Dawkins. I think you'll see even more, hear more from him this year. Even Dawson Knox. So I don't think this team lacks good young players who are still ascending. I don't think this team lacks really good established players who have some leadership qualities in them. And this team knows how to win. I think I saw a stat, I think it was Colin Coward who put it out there. I mean, it sucks because they don't, you know, follow through in the playoffs, but it's a team that's won more than anyone in the NFL over the last 5 years. So they know how to win. They know what the playoffs is about. They know what pressure's about. They have won games in the playoffs. So to say the Super Bowl window is closed, just at best, it's being short-sighted. You're just not informed enough. At worst, you're just being a hater. You're searching for clicks. You want people to listen to your takes on TV. Just, again, idiotic. The Super Bowl window's not closed. But, I mean, let's be fair here. So that's why I said the Bills Super Bowl window's not closed, but they did have a lot of losses on this team. And you can't just write them off as nothing because they're more than that. All right? Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, Trey White, Mitch Morse, Gabe Davis, who was a captain, Leonard Floyd, Stephon Diggs. That's a lot of talent, man. That is a lot of talent. That is a lot of veteran leadership. That is the calming voices in the locker room. Those are leaders. They really are. They truly are. And it's just not easily replaceable. And I know, and I get it, some of these players, their best days were long gone. You know, Micah Hyde was not the Micah Hyde that we've seen the previous 4 or 5 years, what we saw this past year. Not even close. In some ways, almost a shell of his former self. But he's still a presence out there. Jordan Poyer, you know, I feel like I'm in the minority because I've heard so many people say that Jordan Poyer was washed up. I didn't see it. I didn't see it last year. When his best year, again, not all pro Poe, but he was still a pretty effective player. A big moment player, too. Even in that Chiefs playoff loss when you were begging for somebody on that defense to make a goddamn play, Jordan Poyer is one of the very few who actually did. And I'm not so confident that even past his prime Poyer, past their prime Micah Hyde, I'm not all that confident that Taylor Rapp and Mike Edwards are going to be an upgrade. Trey White, you know. I mean, look, there you can make an argument. You got Rasul. You got Benford. Maybe you're not really losing much at corner, but you're losing that leadership. I got question marks at the offensive line. I don't like Mitch Morris getting cut. We'll see how that plays out. They seem determined that Connor McGovern will get the job done at center. We'll see. And again, losing one receiver is one thing. The Bills lost both of their best two receivers. So you lost a lot. And the addition so far, to me personally, not all that inspiring. I like Curtis Samuel. I think if he's used correctly, he can do some good things in his offense. And I'm not saying that he's not better than two guys I'm going to mention right now. But what I will say is, for the last two off seasons, I've heard the same thing. Last year, Deontay Hardy, the year before Isaiah McKenzie, when he got a promotion from being like that fourth or fifth guy, he was going to be the Bills starting slot receiver in 2022. These gadget guys, they can line up in the backfield, they can split out, run end rounds, reverses, great on special teams, yards after the catch, big play type of guys, and it just never materialized the last couple of years. It could with Curtis Samuel. Again, Curtis Samuel's a former second-round pick. I'm not saying he's not more talented than Hardy. or McKenzie. Just saying, I've heard it before with that type of player. So I guess I need to see it. I don't like him better than Stephon Diggs. I don't even know that I like him better than Gabe Davis, which I'm sure will be an unpopular opinion. I still think Gabe Davis was a better football player than most fans give credit for. But anyway, you add him, you add Mike Edwards. Okay, bad. You could do worse. He was on my list of safeties that I'm like, all right, I'm good with this guy. So I'm not going to hit on Mike Edwards being here. Pretty good move. But after that, meh. So you lose a lot. And you had Samuel, you had Edwards, and a bunch of role players. Right now, as things stand, and Brandon Bean emphasizes it, he's not wrong. A lot of offseason left. A lot. Free agency up to the draft, although I don't really expect much now. The draft itself, which everything is on the table for the Buffalo Bills with the draft now. You lost a lot of guys. You trade Stephon, you picked up a number two next year. Everything's on the table for the Bills. Pick 28, trade down, trade up a little bit, trade up to the middle of the first round. Julio Jones, psychopathic trade up. All that shit's on the table for the Buffalo Bills with the draft. And then after the draft, you know, last year, the Bills signed Leonard Floyd on June 6th. He led the team in sacks with 10.5 last year. So the roster is not complete, not by a long shot. But right now, today, as we record this, as I'm talking to you, this team is not better than it was last year. And I don't even know how anyone could argue otherwise. I really don't. So you got that. And then last, and I mean, we've been saying this for a couple of years now, but man, the AFC's stacked. All right. Let's start with the team that Stephon Diggs just got traded to. Houston is on the rise, man. Houston, you're talking about those number one tier teams, those top tier teams. You better at least include Houston. And that's not all just potential either. This team that won a division last year and won a playoff game. They did what the Bills did last year. They won a playoff game. They won their division. A great young second-year quarterback now. They got Danielle Hunter. They got Diggs. Joe Mixon. Will Anderson's a stud, young defensive end. They were able to go get a lot of guys now because they got a franchise quarterback and a franchise edge rusher on rookie deals. We're only going in the year two of their deals. So they ain't getting another contract for at least another 2 years. So Houston is a legit force. The Cincinnati Bengals, Joe Burrow back healthy. That makes them a legit force, which by the way, whether you like it or whether you don't, the Cincinnati Bengals have owned the Buffalo Bills over the last 2 years. They smacked them on the road in the playoffs. They smacked Buffalo last year on a Monday night game, which was not as close as the score indicated. And quite frankly, I mean, I guess you'll never know, but they looked like they were well on their way to beating the shit out of the Buffalo Bills the night where the DeMar Hamlin near tragedy happened. So the Bengals are a force, and they got their stud quarterback back. Yeah. Chiefs. I mean, what are you freaking going to say about the Chiefs, man? They are literally back-to-back defending Super Bowl champions right now. And I thought their offense was pretty shitty last year. And they're already addressing that. Hollywood Brown, they signed. You know they're going to get a receiver in this draft. Kansas City Chiefs should be considerably better on offense next year than they were this year. The Jets, man, shit, man. The Jets have done a ton this offseason. Plus, if you can stay healthy, they got Aaron Rodgers. And maybe to some extent, he may be washed up to some extent. But shit, man, even a semi-washed up Aaron Rodgers is going to be a lot better than freaking Zach Wilson, right? So the Jets are a factor. Baltimore's still a factor. Miami, until we see otherwise, still a factor. So the AFC is loaded. And at the end of the day, look, man, I have feared that the 2021, 2022, 2023 Buffalo Bills, 3 straight years, man, the easiest path to a Super Bowl that you're ever going to see for the Bills. I don't say ever, but it was an easy path. They conceivably could have went to minimum of 1 Super Bowl, and you could even make an argument that if things fell their way, if they did things right, the Bills could have been you know, looking to go to their fourth straight Super Bowl right now. And I know that sounds absolutely fucking ludicrous, but it's not really. 2021, you had Kansas City done. Finished. 13 seconds, man. 13 seconds from a home AFC championship game against the Cincinnati Bengals. You had it. It was right there. 2022, divisional round, man. You got the Bengals at home. A Cincinnati Bengals team that was missing three offensive line starters plus a DB. You get them at home. You handle business at home. Then you got a neutral field AFC title game against the Kansas City Chiefs winning in the wings. So you weren't even having to go to Arrowhead. I think it was Atlanta that they would have went to if they won that game. So that's right there for you. And then even this past year, you're in AFC divisional round. You're playing the Chiefs at home. A team that has really struggled on offense almost all season long. You got a halftime lead in your stadium and a date, which I always thought Baltimore was at least semi-frauds, which we kind of saw in the AFC Championship game. But the Bills blew it. They didn't get it done. Injuries killed them. Didn't play defense. Two terrible drops from Trent Sherfield. A even worse drop from Stephon Diggs. A couple breakdowns. And bam, the Bills lose a game that it feels like they had absolutely no business losing. So three straight years, that path just felt tailor-made for them. And at the end of the day, they just didn't get it done. So again, the Super Bowl window, far from closed. I explained plenty of reasons why, but I don't think you're going to get an easier path than you've had these last 3 years. Real quick here, and I'm going to bounce. WrestleMania, like I said, I want to save this for the end of the show because I know most of you don't really care about wrestling. But if you're still watching and listening, you haven't turned this off yet, it means you probably do. WrestleMania 40 in Philly in the books. Just quickly, a couple highs, couple lows, my own personal opinions from the show. In terms of the highs, I like the fact that they decided to make a lot of change, even if they're not necessarily people that I love winning titles. I love the fact that it's just not the same old, that they truly are ushering a new era of WWE in. And part of doing that is to get the titles off some of the people who've been holding them for a very long time. Roman Reigns, 4 years. Gunther, the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time. Seth Rollins, he's been the only guy who's held the new World Heavyweight Championship belt since that tournament. So a lot of change, man. Cody Rhodes wins. Damian Priest, shocking fashion. He takes the belt, well, I was going to say from Seth, but actually from Drew McIntyre. Bayley wins the SmackDown Women's Championship. Sami Zayn is the guy who finally defeats Gunther. Awesome Truth wins tag team gold. They actually split them up. Austin Theory and Grayson Walker, or Waller, I'm sorry. They are the SmackDown tag team champs. So like I said, plenty of change. And change sometimes is good. I will admit, I absolutely hated Roman Reigns losing on Sunday night. By the way, I got my balls busted by some friends. So two nights of WrestleMania, of course. I bought two hoodies for the occasion. Saturday, I was walking around in a red Jimmy Uso No Yeet hoodie. Sunday, I had the Levels Above Roman Reigns black hoodie. And I guess it must be a mush because both dudes lost. So anyway, look, hated Roman Reigns losing the belt. To me, I would have had him be champ for another 5 years. And Cody never finishes the story if I'm in charge. But it was a great match. It really was. That main event of night two was an outstanding match. And I thought it was even better storytelling, especially if you pay attention to wrestling and all the little Easter eggs and you know, just the nuggets that come into it, paying attention to what's said and why it's said at the time and how it comes back later on to matter. Seth Rollins telling Cody Rhodes in February that he would be his shield against Roman, and then ultimately him coming out to the Shield music and the Shield gear, and that moment where Roman Reigns has the chair, Does he hit Cody Rhodes in the back because it was bloodline rules? Hit him in the back, pin him, keep the belt, or does he get revenge because he just can't get over Seth Rollins turning on him years prior in the Shield? Well, he chooses Seth Rollins. I thought that was some awesome, awesome storytelling. So I love that. I thought Bayley and Io Sky, probably my favorite match of the weekend. I really love that. The crowd was hot for Bayley. I loved seeing that. Great swerve with Damian Priest cashing in on Drew McIntyre. You know, I'm not even shocked that Damian Priest cashed in. But what I expected was maybe CM Punk would screw over Drew McIntyre. Seth finds a way to beat Drew. Maybe Drew attacks him after the match and Damian Priest cashes in. That's what I expected. So kind of a swerve. CM Punk getting physical, beating down Drew McIntyre enough for Damian to come out and cash in. I thought that was really cool. And then Stephanie McMahon coming out to open up night two. Did not see that coming. I thought that was great. I can only imagine the emotion she felt coming out to the ring and then the support from the fans who were going ape shit for her, going crazy. Thought that was awesome as well. So plenty of highs. Lows, I thought top to bottom, kind of like the cards were, felt a little bit like borderline boring. Jimmy versus Jay, I thought that was going to be a great match. I thought originally that might open up night one of WrestleMania. It didn't, which in hindsight, good, because it probably would have set a pretty boring tone. I thought that match kind of sucked. Left a lot to be desired for me. I don't know. Maybe that's just my personal taste. I mean, am I the only one out there, folks, who thinks that Jey Uso is kind of overrated? I mean, I like when he comes out to his music. I like when he gets the crowd going and Pat McAfee gets up, but I don't really think he's a good wrestler. I think it's just mostly telegraphed and kind of boring. So I don't like that. I don't like the fact that AJ Styles never wins an important match anymore. Like AJ Styles at this point of his career just feels like borderline enhancement talent. That's what he is at this point. And the big thing too, you know, the end of the main event night two was really cool. You know, the people coming out and the storytelling. When The Rock came out and he rock bottomed Cena, I was thinking what you were all thinking, waiting for that glass to shatter. And I love The Undertaker, but when that gong hit, a little bit disappointed, man. A little bit disappointed. I was. I really wanted to see Stone Cold. I wonder, and I haven't seen any reports, at least as of this statement, either why they didn't work something out with Stone Cold, because of business, personal, I don't know. But man, seeing Stone Cold come out, with all due respect to the Taker, instead of The Undertaker, would have been just perfect. And then last thing, I kind of already hated. It appears The Rock's going away for a while. I mean, he did his thing. He helped hype up WrestleMania. He built a story. And I really enjoyed it. Didn't like it at first. I couldn't stand The Rock being back. I'm like, he's just taking everything away from Roman and Cody. But he ended up being a heel and the final boss and that gimmick, that moniker. It all caught on and I thought it really worked. Like, I loved seeing The Rock come out. And then the night after, Monday night, he comes out on Raw to confront Cody, tells him, don't break my heart again, hands him something, which is a mystery we don't know, going away for a while. I don't know. Guess that's a nice little cliffhanger, and we'll see how that plays out. But I wish The Rock was sticking around just a little bit longer. I'm not going to stick around any longer. This has been more than enough for a solo episode. I want to thank you very much for watching the show, for listening. I always invite your feedback. You can hit me up on Twitter at Patrick Moran, TB, email, talkingbuffalopodcast@gmail.com. Like I said, I'll be back with a brand new show, Tone Pucks, tomorrow. And then Thursday night, live from Imperial Pizza, my guy, Jay Skirsky. Talk to you then.